Welcome into a Tuesday edition of Wager Watch. I am Doug Kazarian. Three more NBA playoff games tonight. I think the dogs might bark in a couple of them. We'll get into that. But really, I love some player props. We'll break those down and why I am fading a Cy Young Award candidate just because he's pitching on the road. All that and much more. Mariah is going to join me. I hope you do as well.
We are talking marquee matchups in the NBA because it's playoff time and there's nothing better. So we are looking at this 76ers-Knicks game five with New York leading the series 3-1. And the Knicks favored once again by 4 with the total at 204. Do they get it done?
I'm bummed the series isn't 2-2. It feels like it should be 2-2. But give the Knicks credit for winning game two, stealing it in the final minute. And then obviously big win in game four. The crowd was very New York-centric in Philly, so that was a little point of contention. Look, I really respect this Philly team. I mean, Nick Nurse's track record's spoken for. Maxey's been great this entire year. And then Embiid's hobbling around, but he's putting up monster numbers. The key in the last game and the reason New York won was Brunson, but also just the horrendous execution by the Sixers down the stretch in the final few minutes. This number shaded to 4 because they expect a little bit of a resistance from Philly, not going to fold. Bogdanovich unlikely, it looks like. And like, what more can Brunson do kind of thing? I lean Philly here. I want to be on the dog here, but wish I could get 5, not 4. So it's just a small lean there. I think the offenses are starting to pick up, but I have to side with the under. I think the under is probably the play, but I've been so impressed with Embiid to fight through this, but at some point, like it's his reputation, right? Like he is not going to be fully healthy. So in terms of the betting edge, there really isn't one. I think there would have been one. It was 4.5, and I think it got bet down. So 5 would have been a great bet, I think, Philly. But I think it's just a lean at 4.
Okay, and you mentioned him. Jalen Brunson has been going off in this series. Each game, his point total is going up and up and up. And now for his prop, for his scoring prop, it's 34.5. He's coming off a 47-point game. Does he hit 34.5?
I mean, it's like, how many times do I want to get hit over the head? So I've bet under each of the last two games. And of course, that's when he breaks out 40 plus. 34.5 is just insane. I have to go under because it's not like I'm grabbing this out of thin air. So look at the regular season game log, if you will. He had trouble scoring against the Sixers team. And it's Batum. And I mean, look, he's great at getting other guys involved. So it's almost like the Sixers are doing a good job of taking others involved. But Brunson's getting to his spot with his fakes, his post moves. He's getting his shots. Now, postseason, you have more minutes. I don't know if that's possible with Tibbs, but it is, I guess. And then he's in a zone. I have to think Nick Nurse isn't going down with Brunson going to beat him for 40-plus. So I'm going to bet the under 34.5. I would not have bet it if it stayed at 31.5, what the prop was for the last game. But because they're baiting it or begging me to do it at 34.5, I'm just going to be a glutton for punishment, I guess. Because it keeps going up, and then at some point there's going to be an adjustment. Now, it's not a big play or anything, but, I mean, 34.5 for a player prop is pretty high. I mean, that's like what Luka is right now. So, and he's walking 30-plus. So, I mean, look, Brunson's been great all year. I shouldn't be surprised. But I'll have a small bet on the under.
Okay, so for the side, lean Sixers for the total under, and for Jalen Brunson's scoring prop, under as well. The replays right there for your marquee matchup. We are eyeing a primetime play in the NBA. Pacers at Bucks. Pacers kind of putting on a show right now. Favored by 4 in this matchup with the total at 216. Obviously, the Bucks, no Giannis. Damian Lillard is probably going to be out for this one. Does it all end here?
I think so. I was super impressed with the Bucks in the last game. The problem with is just the Pacers hit every shot, but they give up points. Indy has no regard for defense. It's really kind of just mesmerizing, just how willing to like give up stuff. Now, the Bucks were shorthanded, as you said. It looks like Lillard's not going to be able to go just because these injuries are not just like a simple injury, so it's complicated. That's why Giannis has been out a while. Now, Bobby Portis was ejected after only a few minutes. I expect him to play, and he'll help, but I also expect the others that played so great in Sunday's game are not going to put up the same kind of points, although maybe Indy's defense will allow it. So I lean to the over because I don't think much of Indy's defense at all. This is not your conventional playoff atmosphere where like the defense cranks up. It's like, nah, these guys like don't care about defense. And the Bucks defense has improved under Doc, but it's still not good. Now, Dame is a weak miss for defense and he's not playing. And Beverly will set the tone. Portis will set the tone. Lopez is a rim protector. So they're not bad defense. But I do lean over just because the Pacers are sort of in a groove. I'd lay the four as well. The Bucks, I mean, look, they're not going to go down quietly, but I think they go down. I've been really impressed. They've sort of solved the, remember, Indy lost game one, and then they sort of solved things. Siakam, there's nobody who can guard him. Obviously, that guy would be Giannis if he were healthy, but Siakam's too good. And then Miles Turner and Haliburton finally broke out of his scoring slump. So I think this is, Indy's series. I'm not pulling the trigger here because I was all about the series bet going into the series, and then even after game one, after game two. So I'm just sitting tight, but it's tough to lay points on the road, but it's their favorite for a reason. I think they handle their business.
Okay, and for this matchup, to spice things up, the prop market, anything jumping out at you?
Yeah, I think Milwaukee's interesting, right? When you take out Giannis and you take out Dame, it's like, well, who's, so they sort of did it by committee because Portis got ejected, but I think Portis is the likely answer. So his prop's 20.5. And, last game he got ejected after a few points. But before that, he was 17, 14, and 15. And that's with Dame going for, like, a bunch of points, right? So I think he gets to that over. Portis, I joked last week, like, turns into, like, prime Karl Malone anytime Giannis is out. So, I mean, he can stretch the defense. He's physical. He's not a guy who's going to be one foot out the door, senioritis, sort of going into an elimination game. He's intense. I think he probably feels bad about the ejection. So I expect a really big game from him. This is my favorite play on this game. I think the Portis prop is the right angle.
Okay, so you got a side, you got a total, and you got a prop for your primetime play. Will the Pacers take care of business against the Bucks? To be determined. We are hitting the hardwood with a little courtside cover in the NBA. We're looking at the Magic at the Cavs. It took Orlando a minute to figure out the playoffs in general, which is okay. They're young. They're getting there. They're figuring it out. But have they figured it out?
That's the million-dollar question. Can I wait till about end of the first quarter to let you know? Because I think that's going to be telling because they got blown out in game one. Couldn't even get to 90 points. Games one and two. Come back home. All is right in the world. They blow them out. So is this just like a home cooking thing? I think Orlando sort of has figured it out, like what it takes to win in the postseason. They got a little shell shock. It almost reminds me it's bit of a stretch, but the Marlins last year get to the playoffs and just are overwhelmed by the Phillies crowd, the atmosphere. I think they had like two hits in each of the first two games. It's just a different animal, and Cleveland learned that maybe the hard way last year with the Knicks, and now Orlando, so it's like a baptism by fire. But I think the Magic are so well balanced, and Boncaro still didn't play great in game four. He had better stats in game three. I think Wagner and the other guys are picking it up, and we'll see if they travel. Role players typically play better at home. Cleveland guys. But I think Orlando's better coached. And I like Orlando. I actually think this could be one of those weird series. It happens every once in a while where the road team loses the first two games and then wins the next four. So I actually think they steal this. I think this is going to be a tight game. I like the dog here. I think Orlando's just a better matchup. Cleveland's got some funky stuff going on. Like the Garland's like can't figure it out. Mitchell's great when he's on. The bigs sort of haven't figured it out. And again, I think Biggerstaff's on thin ice. I think he's a little jumpy with some of his coaching moves. So I'll roll with the dog here.
Okay. And with this game, DraftKings has a pretty fun prop posted. For series leader, their total points, Donovan Mitchell is the favorite at +115. But if you look down at their totals so far, Mitchell's got 84, Wagner's got 86, Boncaro's got 85. So they are all like 1 point within each other. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I think because Wagner just had the big game, I think he's the one you take a shot with the +350 or whatever, right? Like, I think that's the one because he's the key to that offense. Boncaro is awesome. Like, he'll put up his points. He's just like a modern-day version of Blake Griffin. Like, he's more, base up the basket because that's where NBA is right now. But I think Wagner's their shooter. So Mitchell is very good, and he can go for anything, and he can go bonkers. But if Wagner goes, it's worth, I think, the extra candy, the extra payout. So I think I'm going to have a fun, like a half unit play on that. But it is kind of funny. Those three guys are all like the leading scorers. And they're all within a couple points of one another. But If you believe Orlando's like the thing, then you can bet them. Orlando to win in six is plus 350 as well, I believe. So stuff like that, I think, because if Orlando steals this game in Cleveland, I think you can bet the house on Moneyline game six. So I'm rolling with the Magic here, and I think it'd be fun to bet the Wagner play as well.
Okay, a two-for-one special for your courtside covers, a Magic take on the Caps. We are given props in the NBA, looking at a couple player props for you this postseason. So first up, in Philly, we've got Tyrese Maxey. His total, 24.5. He's surpassed this in three of the four games so far this series. Can he do it again?
I think so. I like the over here. I think with these types of things, you want to look at what's the floor and what's the ceiling. In my eyes, given, you know, the longer minutes in the playoffs, who Maxey is, the volume of shots he gets, I'm of the belief that the floor is like 20, but the ceiling is like high 30s, or maybe even 40. So I just think if you have that window and 24.5 is the cutoff, now obviously he's more likely to be towards the middle of 24.5, but you know, in both games in New York, he was in the 30s. He had 20-plus shot attempts in games 3 and 4 in Philly, and they just weren't dropping. Now, Embiid's been going off. He's been the focal point, so there's a little give and take there. But 24.5 is low. I would have had this at, like, 27.5. I think that's the right number. But, again, coming off two lower-scoring games, I think this is the right time to strike. He's an aggressive player. He shoots threes. He definitely is super aggressive when Embiid's resting. And maybe they're going to rest Embiid a little bit because he hit such a, you know, stalled in the fourth quarter. But maybe it's more optionality towards Maxey in this, hopefully deference to him. So I'm going to roll with Maxey. I think he's the guy.
Okay, and looking to the Pacers, Tyrese Haliburton has finally broken out of his shooting slump, thank God, because he is so fun to watch. His total right now is 17.5. Each game, his points total has gone up. And up, yeah. And up, 24 in the last one. Is this doable?
It is. I was hoping it'd be like closer to 20.5 and go under because he made all these threes, which he had not done in the series. I think he's somewhere in between. You want to be careful about betting on a guy who's just had this like breakout, six, whatever amount of threes he had. But the number's still pretty low. And I think he understands that he needs to score for this team to be at its best form. Like, still defer to others, get them involved. It's a small lean to the over. I still think he's a pass-first guy, but he takes those threes. If he can hit a couple, let's say he hits three. I mean, that's where his prop is. Let's say he hits two. That's six. He's only got 12 more points to go, and he gets to the line, and it's really easy for him to get to 18. I just wish this was lined higher, but I think it's going to be a higher-scoring game. I think the Bucks are really in some trouble here with being so undermanned. I would lean to the over, but I certainly prefer the Maxey play more.
Okay, so two player props right there. Two overs, or I guess like 1.5 overs. But there you have it for those matchups. Do or don't, that is the question. We are looking at some players, some matchups. They might be in a slump. Are they due to pick it up, or are we not touching them? We're looking at the MLB Giants at Red Sox, San Francisco favor or price at minus 130. Logan Webb is on the bump. He is phenomenal at home. However, his numbers are not so great on the road, and the Red Sox have seemed to at least found their offense a little bit. 17 runs two games ago against the Cubs. They just put up another 5 last game. Is Logan Webb due for a good start on the road across the country, or did he just pile it onto his ERA?
I think you bet the other side. I think you bet Boston here. I think there's something to these splits. If it was one season, especially this early in the year, well, it's more opponent-based. Because sometimes, you know, maybe the scouting is better at home in the division, and, you know, you go on the road and you face, like, lowly team, whatever. It could just be sort of circumstantial coincidence. But these splits have been pretty distinct the last few years, and this year he's been lights out at home. I think the Boston bats have woken up, to your point, and they lead all of baseball in team ERA. So it's not like this Giants team has like great, you know, hitting. And so I think Boston can kind of keep this. I think this should be like a pick'em game. I'm surprised San Francisco's minus 130, but Webb has been great. The question is, we're going to find out. Now, maybe not Boston wet lineup, maybe not like the best litmus test, but I still think there's some line value here. So I definitely would do not bet San Francisco. I think that's the answer to that question. Question is, do you bet on Boston on top of that? Does it the pendulum swing all the way to that side? I think a small play on Boston. If you're a guy who grinds out profit and all that, I think there's a little bit of line value on Boston. So what happens is a lot of the math guys, because it is such a math-driven sport from a betting perspective, they just try to, like, churn out value. Like, is there value? And, yes, I think Boston should be, like, maybe minus 105 kind of situation. So you're getting plus money. I just think, like, can the bet win or will the bet win? I think it definitely can win. Like, will it? I usually, like, resist the temptation. I'm much more selective with my wagers. I don't do parlays, things like that. But I'm definitely, like, do not get enticed on Webb right now, even though he's been great so far this season. He was runner-up in the Cy Young last year. Like, he's got good stuff. I think the Green Monster also messes with people a little bit, especially when you're interleague and you don't usually pitch there. And the outfield, too. The outfielder's on defense. So I would just pass on it. But if I had to play it, I would lean to the home dog here.
Okay, not touching Logan Webb for this one. Maybe ride with the Sox. I will. Class is in session. Welcome to Betology 101, betting terminology broken down by Professor Doug here. And today's word, phrase, line value. What is it?
Yeah, it's a term I use here and there. It's really all about sort of betting value and having an edge based on the market. So what does that mean? In theory, obviously we talk about the casino versus the sports betting market. The casino, the math, it's clean. We know the roulette wheel. We know the craps table and even the deck of cards and things like that to a certain extent. Sports not as clean, but it's the same concept. But the closing number of a game in a major sport like NFL, college football, marquee games, things like that, is as close to the clean math as we get. So sometimes early in the week, you kind of beat the market. So let's say you're laying 2 in a college football game and the line closes at 3, a game involving like Alabama, like a marquee game. You have some line value at 2. Now the question is like, how big of a line value is it? You know, stuff like that. That's what you have to assess, because it's more so like in contests where you're in pick'em leagues and you spreads close on like Friday of an NFL weekend. And you'll get like -3, and the market Sunday all of a sudden goes to like 6 or something like that. Maybe a player's out, the opposing quarterback, and then you have great line value in your pick'em league, so you should always sort of take that -3, even though you might like the other side, something like that. That's all it is. It's locking in a line or a wager or bet in relation to the market. Sometimes it's just number based. For example, this is a really nuanced example, but it's still an example. So sometimes books will get a little confused. So, you know, in a sport that doesn't have ties, like the NBA, let's say a big favorite is trailing at halftime, like by 8. They might make the second half line like 7. So it's +1 for the game. Then they'll go -7, -120. And then it'll go to like 8. Which means pick them for the game. And then they'll sometimes move to like 8.5 with less juice. Well, that's like the same thing, because it's pick them or -0.5 for the game. And obviously can't have ties. So sometimes you get like a good number because the odds makers messed up or something like that, where you get like a good 10 cent or 20 cents. So there's some line value there. Like, you'd rather lay 8.5 flat versus like 8 -20 or -10, because obviously 8, 8.5 are the same thing. So it's around that sort of stuff where you see some edges and some line value and things along those lines. Or sometimes, and we talked about this with the draft, they'll move one market in the index bets, like with all, and then they won't move the other. So a popular one the final week was Jaden Daniels to go #2 overall. His juice moved from like -130 to -400, but then Washington to draft Daniels or Daniels to go to Washington did not move as much. So you got a little bit of line value on that market at, let's say, -250, when the other market was -400. So things like that, you can sort of get a different angle. Like in the NBA playoffs, they'll do series spreads and then they'll do like the money line of that game. So if a team's up 3-1, let's say it's Boston, and they'll be like, oh, the prop of the Celtics to win in 5 games is -300. And then the money line for the game might be like 340. So you can just bet the -300 and get line value in theory, things along those lines. So you can always search for stuff. And that's the concept. You're finding line value if you believe the market on a game or something like that is like the baseline or the, you know, the litmus test.
So would it be similar to like, I always go back to the Super Bowl when you look at the MVP odds versus the game odds.
Correct. That's a great example. Now, there is a scenario where obviously you win one, whatever. But yeah, I mean, you can say like there's that. I would technically say betting value, but I still think line value. It's usually line values if it's the same exact thing. So I guess the NFL draft example is not exactly the same because maybe Washington trades their pick and another team drafts that quarterback second. But in the example of the NBA playoff, like that's the same thing. You're just getting a better number. I think it's more like locking in a spread, like in the Pick'em League example. And it's like, oh, there's line value there if the market, because it's closer to kickoff, so it's more right. If the market at kickoff is like 6 and you get to lock in 3, that's line value in theory. So it's about contests and pick'em leagues, things along those lines.
All right. So line value can be applied in many situations, many different sports. There you have it, broken down by Professor Dudd.